back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, is back to throw. Climbs the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes.
Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And the Giants now turning their attention to the Cleveland Browns as they get set to prepare for Week 5 in the NFL. So glad you could join us this morning here on Big Blue Kickoff. Lance Meadow with you for the next hour as we are previewing the upcoming matchup for the Giants. They are 2-2 on the season. The Cleveland Browns come in at 0-4, still seeking their first win of the season. They've also lost 10 in a row. We are taking your phone calls 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, and you can also follow me and interact with me on Twitter at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So let's talk first about the injury situation for the Giants. And the biggest concern right now is regarding wide receiver Hakeem Nicks, who's already missed two games, sat out the most recent contest, I should say the two most recent contests, but the knee issue is now the most troubling aspect, more so than the foot issue. And I'm going to read you exactly what Tom Coughlin said at his press conference yesterday. He was asked concern about Hakeem Nicks missing back-to-back games. His response, how much concern can I show you? Then he was asked, is his status in doubt for this week? I won't know until I see what happens, where he's as they go forward here and analyze him and the doctors get their hands on him again. He communicates with them. I can't tell you that. So right now they're in the assessment mode. It's the knee. It's not the foot. The foot injury is something they're probably going to have to nurse throughout the course of the season. And he's going to have his days off, which he's shown each and every week leading up to game day. But now the problem is the knee, which swelled up on him right before they were going to head to Philly. So that's why he did not travel with the team. At this point, they need to get the swelling down before he can at least get back on the practice field, test the leg out to determine whether or not he'll be ready to go against the Cleveland Browns. That's why, given the injury to Hakeem Nicks, the development of the young wide receivers such as Ramsey's Barden, Jarrell Jernigan, are crucial at this point. You need those guys to be ready, to know the playbook like the back of their hands. And Barden has shown some flashes. He's shown some promise. The thing with him is, can he put together back-to-back consistent performances? Now, he didn't necessarily have as many opportunities as he had against the Carolina Panthers two nights ago. But at the end of the day, when Manning throws the ball up, when Manning turns to him, he needs to make plays. And I know there's been a lot of focus on that offensive pass interference call. And we talked about it and broke it down from every angle, you name it, yesterday morning when John Schmoke joined me here on Big Blue Kickoff. It was an obvious call. But what you have to understand, whether or not Ramsey's Barden could have done something differently is still up for debate. But he had to make a play somehow. If he was not aggressive enough, Nnamdi Asamoah is going to be in perfect position to intercept that football. And then forget a 54-yard attempt. The Giants are not even going to have a field goal opportunity at the end of the game to at least try to win it. So at that point, he did whatever he could to at least knock the ball away. Could he have done it a little more subtly? Absolutely. But at least you don't leave your quarterback out to dry in that situation. And that is another sign of the development of Ramsey's Barden, his aggressiveness in coming back to the football and trying to make a play when he may not even be in the right position. And Barden is going to be a guy that they're going to turn to on offense, especially if Hakeem Nicks is not healthy enough to be out on the football field week in and week out. Because now you have two injuries that the Giants are somewhat concerned about. It's balancing the foot and the knee. The other main injury of note is with respect to Kenny Phillips. Now, Phillips got hurt early on in that Eagles game. It was a sprained knee that they originally classified it as. Tom Coughlin said it's a sprained MCL. So it's similar to David Deal's injury. And Deal's been out the last few games. His status for Cleveland still up in the air. They're optimistic because he's been making progress. And the difference between Deal and Phillips at this point, and this is something that Tom Coughlin emphasized at his press conference yesterday, it's a lot different for an offensive lineman to have to deal with in the injury compared to a safety because of the mobility issue. Deal doesn't have to move around nearly as much as Phillips. So that will determine how quickly Phillips can get back out there. Usually, and this is just pure speculation, everybody's case is different. When you're talking about an MCL injury, that normally means more than a game. So Phillips could be sidelined depending on how fast he reacts to the medical team working on the MCL. He could be down for a week or two. That's why you couldn't have picked better timing for Tyler Sash to end his suspension. Sash is now eligible to be back with the team. They have an exception on the roster right now. So during the course of this week, they can carry 54 players. Once they activate Sash and dress him for the game, that's when they have to make a move on the roster. So don't expect to see anybody cut or anybody move to the practice squad or so forth until at least the latter part of the week, depending on whether they assess Tyler Sash is ready to contribute. That's the other X factor here. Now, Sash has been working out on his own, but there's a big difference between being in shape and being football ready. And that's one of the things that Tom Coughlin touched on also at his press conference. He knows the playbook. That's not the question. But he now has to get back into the flow of the game. That will determine whether Sash can go out there. But they are definitely in need of an additional safety. Because you have Antro Roll beat up. You have now Kenny Phillips banged up. So they're turning to the likes of Stevie Brown and Tyler Sash at this point. The secondary depth chart is very thin. And the same thing can be said regarding the secondary. Hostley's still a question mark because of the lingering hamstring injury. Now, Prince Amukamara made his first start against the Eagles, and I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, Jeremy Maclin was held to just one catch, wasn't really a big focal point of the game plan, showed some aggressiveness, needs to make some strides in stopping the run. That was Amukamara's biggest issue when you look back at Sunday night's game. And that's going to be a learning curve for him. Remember, this is essentially Amukamara's rookie campaign. Yes, he did play the latter part of the season last year, but for the most part, he is really earning his paycheck and having an opportunity to make a name for himself this season. And that is going to take time till he gets into the flow of the game. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can interact and follow me on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name spelled M-E-D-O-W. And at 10 Eastern, we're going to be joined by Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. She will provide some insight on this Browns squad. But before we do that, let's open up the lines. We go to Abe in California. Abe, what's happening?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my phone call, Lance.
Sure.
I had a couple of questions. It was certainly a disappointing loss as a Giant fan. I was really dismayed on Sunday evening. My question to you is actually there's several questions, and maybe you can answer them for me. One, Chris Collinsworth made a comment mid, about the middle of the second quarter. He basically said that Reuben Randall has a very questionable work ethic. I haven't heard anything about that as a Giant fan. I was kind of curious about that. Also, I'm wondering what transpired as far as the breakdown was concerned with the defense from the second half of that game. In other words, it looked like they were so undisciplined. Corey Webster, the last four games, has really given up some large plays each game. And as far as OC is concerned, he was so undisciplined. He really looked horrible as an all-pro defensive end. So maybe you could address that. Help me understand what transpired.
All right, Abe. Well, appreciate the phone call. And let's touch on the defensive breakdowns, which was certainly a big issue that Tom Coughlin addressed yesterday at his press conference. It was a tale of two halves. Let's make no secret about that. The bottom line is they kept LeSean McCoy in check in the first half, and then all of a sudden, it was the LeSean McCoy show in the second half. And the best way to sum up the defensive inefficiencies has basically been the lack of attention to one's gap. And what I mean by that is everyone's got an assignment, and everyone needs to focus on the player that they're assigned to or the gap or the area of the football field. And they basically lost track of all of that compared to what they were doing in the first half. And OCU Manure was definitely one of the players that you could point to that went on and went out on his own at times throughout the second half. And as a result, LeSean McCoy found some openings and took full advantage of that. You have to also give McCoy credit. He made a lot of top-notch one-on-one moves and faked out the Giants' defense. But if guys are in better position, the second layer of defense specifically, even the linebackers and the secondary, and I alluded to this a bit earlier on Big Blue Kickoff here, Prince Amukamara, there were times where McCoy was getting past the front four and Amukamara was running with his receiver down the field when he probably should have been in better position to help and bring down McCoy. So it was miscommunications, it was the lack of being aware of where the gaps were. Those were the two big contributing factors as to why the defense fell apart. And that is why all of a sudden they let McCoy get comfortable. And as a result of McCoy getting comfortable, Michael Vick is comfortable. Because Vick now didn't have to put the offense on his shoulders. He made some runs when he needed to. He looked for the short yardage situations. But he didn't air it out on Sunday night. He didn't look to make the big home run play. And we talked about this yesterday. For the most part, it was a conservative Eagles game plan. And the reason why they were able to execute that was because in the second half, the Giants' defense didn't test the Eagles nearly as much as they were tested in the first half. Now, the other thing that Abe brought up was with respect to Chris Collinsworth's comments, which I didn't have an opportunity to listen to. I'm on the air here on Giants.com all through the game, and I'm listening to the Giants radio network call. And Collinsworth, by the way, did also touch on OCU Manure not being aware of his gaps at times. I did hear that through another source, that Collinsworth heavily criticized the Giants for that, and rightfully so, as Abe just touched on. I can't speak firsthand of Reuben Randall's questionable work ethic. I have not heard anything. I have not seen anything that has raised a red flag. He's a rookie, and it's a learning curve like any other rookie. So that's why I don't think anyone around the team has been surprised that Reuben Randall hasn't necessarily had a huge role on offense. They've turned to the likes of Dominic Hickson and Ramses Barden in that third wide receiver spot. And they're probably going to continue to turn to those two, given Hakeem Nicks's injury trouble. Randall, right now, the way for him to make a name for himself is going to be on special teams, just as it is for David Wilson. That's where they need to make a name for themselves and pick their bones and impress the coaches and build confidence in themselves and also build trust in their teammates. Outside of that, don't expect Wilson or Randall to have a huge role on offense. And it's not necessarily due to the work ethic. It's basically because, number one, they're still digesting the offense. And more so for Wilson than Randall, when Wilson's had his number called on offense, he hasn't necessarily come through. Something that didn't receive an awful amount of attention from the Eagles game, because Wilson was a great bright spot on special teams, and they're going to need that moving forward. If you look at the starting point for the Giants on all of their offensive drives, they never had their backs against the wall. That's why it was so stunning that the Giants could not take advantage of it consistently throughout the course of the game. But getting back to some of Wilson's mishaps, you had the fumble in the Cowboys game, some pass protection issues that they've seen in practice, and then a third one, the shovel pass, if you remember, in the Eagles game Sunday night, an opportunity for the Giants to move the chains, and Wilson drops that. So you see, there's a track record. When Wilson has had his opportunities, he's not been able to take advantage of that. Now, in comparison to that, when he's had his opportunities on special teams, he's blossomed. He's been a huge bright spot. So look for Randall and Wilson to carve out more of a role on special teams before you're seeing them make big-time plays on offense. And that's also a reflection of the depth of the chart at this point. As I mentioned, when you look at the receiving core, Randall is not at the top at this point. You've got Nicks, you've got Cruz, and they're going to turn to the likes of Hickson and Barden because they know the playbook better at this point. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Big Ed in Maryland. Big Ed, what's happening?
What's up, Big John? How you doing, boss?
It's Lance. John will be joining us a bit later
on. I'm sorry, Lance.
What you got, Big Ed?
I do that all the time. I'm sorry.
No worries. What you got?
Big Lance. Oh, Big Lance. Play call selection. I can't help but look over it. It has to get addressed. If you're third and 19 with 15 seconds to go, you have got to go for it. If you don't take that opportunity to go for it, especially after the bad offensive pass interference. But I kind of don't want to blame Ramsey for it because he's been jawing with Patterson like half that drive. And they've been back and forth jaw-gabbing. I am so proud of Ramsey. He just has to understand in the heat of the battle, you got to keep your composure. That's all that was.
Absolutely. And listen, he had to make a play, Big Ed, because if he doesn't and he's not aggressive, as I mentioned earlier, Nnamdi Asamoah is in a position to make an interception. He makes an interception, game over. We're not even talking about a field goal opportunity at this point. But it's all about, like you said, knowing the time of the game, knowing where you are on the field, and being smart. And that comes with experience. And Barden is showing some strides in that department, but he still has some ways to go.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, but see, that's just the best part. Because just like him and Reuben Randall, they are just starting, really, in his offense. Granted, they've been practicing. You know, they play some good preseason and everything like that. But the best part about it now is they're getting that game time experience. So when the time counts, really counts at the end of the year, we're going to need them the most because we're going to see Philly again. And I already stated a claim to another Philly fan. The next time we play Philly, it's going to be for the division. I'm already calling it out. It's going to be for the division. The division title is going to be on the line, and we're going to take it to them because we'll have them.
All right, Big Ed, appreciate the phone call. Last season, the division crown came down to the last game of the season. It would not surprise me if history repeated itself as the Giants will see the Eagles again later this season, and it will be in the very last week of this campaign. And who knows where the Eagles are going to be at that point? Who knows where the Giants are going to be at this point? The bottom line is there's a lot of football to still be played. So it's way too early to hit the panic button. It's way too early to get overly concerned. What you can take away from Sunday night's performance is the lack of execution and the inability at times for the Giants to get off to a fast start. And the numbers don't lie. The two losses this season, the Giants failed to score a touchdown in the first half. Whereas the two games they won, and the Bucs game wasn't a great start, but they did get on the board a little bit earlier than those other two games. If you move very slowly on offense, you have penalties, you don't execute, you set up third and longs, how do you expect to be in a position to win a football game? That puts strain on any team, on both sides of the football. And that's been the biggest issue in losses. They need to be more consistent in setting the tone early on. And they also need to be more consistent on defense. You've got to be able to put together two quality halves. We've seen some flashes of brilliance at times from this Giants defense, and that was evident Sunday night. The game plan was stop the run, limit McCoy's damage, priority number one. They checked that off when they went into the locker room at halftime, but things fell apart in the second half, and that's why football's a game of adjustments. You stay well-disciplined within your gaps in the first half. You got to repeat that. You got to pick up where you left off in the second half. You can't roam wild and take your fair share of chances, especially when a victory is within your reach. And Tom Coughlin brought this up yesterday. You hold a team to 19 points, you should be in a position to win that football game, but not when you rely on only 17 points. That was a winnable game Sunday. Everyone on this team will tell you that. But if you don't execute, you let opportunities slip away in the red zone, and you let that pile up, it's hard to walk away with a victory. And that's why the Giants right now are 2-2, but the Cowboys lost last night, got beat up by the Bears, 5 interceptions by Tony Romo. We were talking about this before we went on the air. I said, if you would have told me a quarterback in that game would have thrown five picks, I would have picked Jay Cutler, given his track record. Would not have thought it would have been Tony Romo. Bears defense made another big statement. They have been playing good, consistent football. They held the Packers in check, even in that loss earlier this season. So the Bears, the Falcons, there's a lot of teams even outside the division, the Niners, who the Giants are going to see in 2 weeks, that are really setting the tone in the NFC. But the division right now, you got three teams at 2-2, you got one team at 3-1. Nobody's running away with this thing. Giants fans know this well. Everybody beats up one another. But when you have the opportunity to play your division foes, you can't let those opportunities slip away. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, listen, I just wanted to piggyback on the play calling, guys. Oh, my. First of all, I thank the football gods that Dallas did lose last night. But, and that's just, but I would like to say, first of all, I'm just really upset, kind of wondering if, Gilbride is going to realize that balance is what we need in order to even for the defense to feed off of. First of all, they need rest. I'm just really dumbfounded why we really feel the need to air it out immediately in the game when we have, I thought we should have brought Brown in, first of all, and just realize he's going to be the bruiser. He's going to be the, I think, more consistent back at the end of the day. I just don't think Bradshaw is quite as hungry as he needs to be. And I think the defense feeds off of the running game. A, it gets the rest. B, I think they watch, with Giants football, we run the ball. Okay, I just don't understand why we feel like we have to make Eli a hero in every situation. I was glad to see Tom Coughlin take some accountability, obviously, on Monday morning, revisiting his decision at the end of the game not to try to make a quick pass, but I felt like we should have ran the ball more and just, rather than even try to pass in the first place once we got in the field position. So I'm just wondering why they feel the need for Gilbride to try to make Eli throw the ball, just all over the place when we really should be focusing on running the game, creating balance, and that's when we were at our best, the last week when we ran the ball more. We got away from that too early, and I just want to know what you guys thought about that.
And that's a good point, Steve, and appreciate the phone call. I want to try to get through some more calls before we have Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer at the top of the hour. But just to feed off of what Steve just said, you're right. You throw the ball 42 times Sunday night, you run the ball only 19. They're striving for balance, and they didn't live up to their end of the bargain on Sunday night. The bottom line is you need to stick to the run. Even if it's not working and you're not getting the yardage per carry that you want, you need to remain balanced because, number one, it milks the clock and it keeps the defense off guard. Bradshaw got 13 carries. Andre Brown only got 5. And on those 5 carries, he only ran for 14 yards. But like any other running back, you need a handful of carries till you develop some rhythm. And Brown has shown aggressiveness. He's shown discipline. He is stuck to the scheme when he's been given the football. But they need to give him more than 5 carries. And I think the game plan moving forward was to definitely run the football a lot more than they wound up doing. But what happened at the end of the day was that they didn't like what they saw in terms of the production, the yardage per carry. Bradshaw had only 39 yards on those 13 carries, so they felt with Nnamdi Asamoah out, they wanted to air the ball out more. But when you throw over 40 times, the percentages work against you in terms of winning a football game. They need to get back to better balance, and you could have made the argument they could have taken some chances in running the football once they got to the 26-yard line on that final drive. Maybe take the conservative route. And Tom Coughlin even admitted, hindsight's 20/20. Had he had another opportunity, he maybe would have done things a little bit differently. 201-939-4513. We go to our very good friend Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing this morning?
Doing well, Len. What you got?
Could you imagine what your phone calls would have been like this morning if Eli had thrown 5 interceptions last night in a football game? We are so lucky, it's unbelievable. But the real reason for my call was on the Randall and Collinsworth thing. I'm sure Chris Collinsworth heard something. He's not going to make something up like that. I mean, I'm sure he's heard something from inside the organization about Reuben Randall. But I got to say this. I thought it was in terrible form for Collinsworth to say something about what's going on with Reuben Randall. The kid was a junior eligible. He's 20 years old, maybe 21. I mean, he hasn't even played his fourth professional football game yet, regular season professional football game. Collinsworth's been there. Give this kid a break. Wait till game 12. Wait till early next season. I thought it was in bad form. I guess it's open. When you hear something, it's open season. You can repeat it. All right. And he's got it. I'm sure if you press him, he's got a source. Not going to tell us who it is, but he's got a source. But hey, Chris, hold it. Hold it, huh? Give the kid a break. He hasn't even played his fourth game yet. Okay, hey, let's beat the Browns. Good talking to you, Lance.
All right, Len, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And I did not hear the comments, but clearly now Len, the second caller, alluding to those comments that were made on the NBC broadcast. And I agree with Len. You know, these young guys, they need an opportunity to develop. And early on, sometimes, you know, they make mistakes and they may not be the best presence in the locker room, or they may get frustrated when they mess up a play in practice. And it shows to the coaching staff. But it's hard to judge a guy based on only four games and limited opportunities within those games. So I think the jury is still out on Reuben Randall. Second round pick, a guy that the Giants were flabbergasted that fell to them in the second round. Remember, they thought he would have potentially went in the first round or the higher picks in the second round. And he fell all the way to them. So that was certainly a pleasant spot for the Giants to be able to get him where he fell, to walk away with Wilson and walk away with Randall. But Randall is going to be a contributing factor this season and in years to come. It's just too early at this point to get a good gist of what exactly Randall is going to contribute to this team when we're not even midway into his rookie campaign. I mean, he's just digesting the playbook and just digesting training camp. Let him breathe a little, as Len just mentioned. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Mike in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how are you? I was just curious, what is the situation with Kenny Phillips' injury, and is Hakeem Nicks going to play this weekend?
All right, Mike, appreciate the phone call, and you were touching on the injuries. As I mentioned earlier, Kenny Phillips has a sprained MCL. It's a week-to-week thing at this point. It's similar to the David Deal injury. And David Deal missed a couple of games already. They're going to see how he progresses with treatment throughout the course of this week. I would say, barring a miracle, it's going to be a long shot for Kenny Phillips to get out there. That's why it's a positive that Tyler Sash's suspension has come to an end. They'll get him back into the mix, depending on whether or not he's ready to go. Remember, he's been away from the team. He has been working out on his own, but he needs to get back into the flow of the game and digest the playbook, depending on some new plays that they've implemented. With respect to Hakeem Nicks, right now they're going to take their time with Hakeem Nicks to determine whether or not he can nurse the knee, he can nurse the foot, get back to full health, and be able to go out there against the Cleveland Browns. But I would say at this point, and still early in the week, he is going to be a long shot to suit up along with Kenny Phillips. That's why the development of Ramsey's Barden has been critical over the last couple of games, because he is going to get his number called specifically on Sunday if Hakeem Nicks is not ready to go out there. If for those of you holding on the line, I preach patience. We're going to talk Cleveland Browns football a bit now, and after the interview, we will get back to your phone call. So stay tuned for that, 201-939-4513. But right now, we welcome into the program Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Mary Kay, from covering the Giants the last few seasons, I thought this team had the worst luck with injuries. Then I looked at the Browns list this week and realized Cleveland may actually give New York a run for its money. Numerous injuries across the board. What's the chances 46 guys dress for Cleveland on Sunday?
Yeah, well, they are going to have a hard time getting enough really good guys out there. There are some key players injured. First of all, T.J. Ward underwent surgery on his right thumb. That's a huge loss if T.J. Ward can't play this game, and I'm a little skeptical about whether or not he will be able to play. Although his fellow safety, Ray Ventrone, has been playing with a very similar injury. They have a plate and six screws inserted into the thumb to repair it. Ray Ventrone missed one game, so will T.J. miss or will he play? That's a big question heading in. And then Josh Cribbs, I don't know if anybody saw that, but he was drilled in the head on the Thursday night game. And it looked like he was knocked out cold down on the field for a while. He has a concussion. Still thinks he might be able to play. But there are three receivers that are out right now: Travis Benjamin, Muhammad Massaquah, Josh Cribbs. Don't know if any of them will be able to play.
You know, you just alluded to the receiving core, and Greg Little had his best statistical game against the Ravens, but mental mistakes, specifically drop passes, has been his biggest issue. How much confidence does the coaching staff have in Little? Where does he stand in terms of perhaps developing into that go-to receiver?
Well, you know, they have to have confidence in him right now because they really don't have anyone else. It's a very young and inexperienced receiving core. You've got rookies like Travis Benjamin and Josh Gordon adjusting to the pro game. They need Greg Little to step up and catch that ball this year, especially with Muhammad Massaquah a little bit sidelined with this hamstring injury. Greg needs to be able to hang on to the football. He's inconsistent as a receiver, and right now he is leading the NFL in drop rate.
When you look at the Browns receiving core, and I think most Giants fans would feel this way, even those around the NFL, the names don't really jump off the page. And I know you threw numerous names out there, but if you're the Giants defense, who are you concerned with from the perspective of the secondary?
Well, I mean, you have to look at Greg Little first because, again, he's one of the only healthy guys out there. And when he does catch the ball, he's a big guy. And he can beat you if he can hang on. So he gets open. That's not the problem. So he can muscle his way for separation, but it's just a matter of hanging on. He dropped one in the end zone in this past game. It's the second time he had a sure touchdown slip through his hands. So he's number one. And then if Muhammad Massaquah plays, he's been very consistent and very good this season. Travis Benjamin, he's the one that's got all the speed. This kid can really, really fly. But he's very inexperienced, and a lot of times when Brandon will look to him on an out route, it gets picked off because he doesn't exactly know about where to place himself in terms of, you know, on the cornerback and things like that. So, you know, they have some guys that can catch the ball. Josh Gordon, big guy, 6'4", caught only one pass this past game. He's really still learning the game.
Talking with Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It was a rough career opener for Brandon Whedon, 4 picks against the Eagles. But when you look at the last 3 games, it seems he's been getting more comfortable with the offense. What has changed for Whedon?
Well, first of all, he is getting more comfortable. He's being able to stand in there and take a hit better. He's hanging onto the ball when he does get hit, as opposed to losing it even 3 times in that first game. So he's going through his progressions a lot better. The thing that he needs to do now is have somebody come up with the big play for him. In this past game, there had to be at least, there were 7 drops at least in this game against the Ravens. And if one or two of those plays would have been made, they could have tied the game at the end. And so he just needs somebody to step up for him. But he's really coming on strong. I felt that he played well in this last game. He's been a little streaky from time to time, but he's really starting to come around, and I think the Giants will be impressed with him.
And another guy that Brandon Whedon can rely on is Trent Richardson, who was viewed as a workhorse dating back to his days with Alabama. Only 14 carries in last week's contest against the Ravens. How do you think they'll look to get him more involved Sunday against the Giants?
Well, the whole key with Trent Richardson is to not get behind in the football game. If you get behind, of course, you're not going to be able to hand the ball off to him all the time anymore. And so they need quicker starts. They need to be able to keep him involved. However, he is pretty good out of the backfield, catching the ball out of the backfield, and he leads this team with 15 catches. Now, that's only good enough for a tie for 50th in the NFL, but nevertheless, he is the team's leading receiver right now. So, you know, he's got that going for him, but, you know, they've got to stop falling behind, you know, 14-0 or whatever the case may be, and, Trent being able to roll right over you, because he will do that.
Talking with Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, I want to switch gears to defense from Cleveland's perspective. This is going to be the 4th game the Browns are going to be without their top corner, Joe Hayden, due to the suspension. Now, last season, he was viewed as a shutdown corner because most top receivers had trouble putting up big numbers. How has the defense adjusted without Hayden?
Well, not very well, to be honest with you. Their other starting cornerback, Sheldon Brown, they've determined now that he's more of a third corner. So even when Joe comes back, it's going to probably be Dimitri Patterson starting opposite him. Without Joe and without Sheldon still being able to start this year anymore, they really struggled there. Anquan Boldin caught 9 passes for 131 yards this past game, including 125 in the second half alone. Most of those came against Dimitri Patterson. Now, he's out there, he's battling, but, you know, you need 3 good cornerbacks right now, and the Browns, you know, they just don't really have that without Joe. And it's really hurt them a lot. I would venture to say that they would have at least 1, maybe 2 victories if Joe had been around.
And you mentioned Anquan Boldin's big game. And if you're the Giants, you have a guy named Victor Cruz who's in the slot, a headache for most opponents. Very hard time for any corner in this league to match up with him. Does Cleveland have anyone in the speed department that they can throw the way of Victor Cruz?
They have someone in the speed department. Buster Skrine is lightning fast. He can probably clock somewhere, I would say, maybe in the 4.2s, in the 40 right now. But he is very, very young and raw and also still learning the game. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not they would use him in that situation. Right now they're actually using Dimitri Patterson in the slot. So we'll have to see how those matchups are going to work out this weekend. But these have been long games without Joe Hayden.
Dimitri Patterson, Sheldon Brown, 2 former Eagles. Then you look at Pat Shurmur, a former assistant with the Eagles. Dick Duran, the defensive coordinator, also with Philly. A lot of personnel that's familiar somewhat with the Giants. How much does that help Cleveland in their preparation this week?
I think it will help them some. Pat Shurmur's been involved in a lot of those big kinds of battles. But I don't think it will. I don't think it'll help a ton. I mean, he's even been somewhat far removed for that, having spent, you know, time in St. Louis before he came to Cleveland. You know, there's a lot of Eagle influence, but I think it'll help a little bit. But you know, I think they need so much going into this game. They need to hit some of the big plays. They need some of these cornerbacks to be able to, to shut down a Victor Cruz. And I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it. And then if Hakeem Nicks plays, obviously that adds a whole other dimension.
Talking with Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. When you look at the Browns defense, Mary Kay, what's jumped out to me, I noticed the linebacker core has 5 of the team's 6 interceptions. Why has that group been so successful in forcing some turnovers?
You know, they've had some young guys that have brought some new energy and enthusiasm to the linebacking core. Craig Robertson being first among those guys. He's got 2 of those interceptions. First-year player, very active, great ball skills, and great instincts. So, I mean, he's somebody that I think Eli Manning is going to have to watch for this game.
Before I let you go, Mary Kay, Browns 0-4. They've lost 10 in a row, but they've had some recent success against the defending champs, including a win against the Giants in 2008. They also knocked off the Saints and the Steelers in the years after they won the Super Bowl. How much of a statement game is this for Cleveland?
I think it could be a huge statement game for Cleveland. And I think if you watched what they did on national TV on Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens, a team that some people are picking to go to the Super Bowl, they had an opportunity to tie the game on the very last play in Baltimore, a very hostile environment. So I don't think you can write this team off. There's a lot of young guys where ignorance is bliss. They don't know they're not supposed to be beating the Giants. And they go out and make big plays like Craig Robertson did, picking off Joe Flacco in the end zone. So if these young guys can come together, and specifically if Brandon Whedon can find somebody to catch the ball for him in big moments, they might surprise some people this game.
Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, appreciate the insight and the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer helping me preview the Browns and the Giants as they will collide at MetLife Stadium in Week 5 this Sunday. And a man who also is full of nuggets and notes. And we will get to your phone calls, by the way, momentarily. So for those of you hanging on the line,
just
once again, I preach patience. But John Schmelk has now joined me.
Boo.
Very popular personality around the Timex Center.
Really?
That's
news to me.
That was just taking place.
All right.
I honestly don't have
a ton of stats here or
really?
Anything like that. I have some stuff. Youngest team in the NFL. Average age of 25 and a half years old. Also, the, let's see, what else do I have here? They have 15 rookies. A lot of them play both on defense and offense. Quarterback, running back, and right tackle are first-year starters. They have three second-year starters on offense as well. So, like I said, very young team. 29th in the NFL in terms of time of possession. Clearly, Mary Kay mentioned that, trying to get the lead so you can use Trent Richardson a little bit more. They are fourth in the league in rushing plays of 20-plus yards. So Trent Richardson has made some big plays on the ground. Brandon Wean has thrown for 300 yards in his last two games. Unfortunately, he's only thrown three touchdowns and seven interceptions. They do lead the league in drops to Cleveland Browns, so he has not gotten a lot of help in that respect.
Greg Little, a big reason why.
Very talented, but still very inconsistent. A second-year player, he had 61 catches for 700 yards last year. Hasn't really taken that next step yet. Mohamed Masakwa is really the most reliable receiver. He's hurt. Mary Kay mentioned that. So we'll see if he makes a return this week. Obviously, Josh Cribbs, their big play return guy. He had the concussion last week. Odds are he's not going to be on the field against the Giants on Sunday. That is a wait-and-see type of scenario.
They're banged up as a team.
Yeah, and that really gets to their big thing on defense. They have a good front seven, like she mentioned, a good young linebacking core. Their defensive line is pretty solid, too, but their secondary is a mess. They've had safeties in and out of the game. They're two safeties, Young and Ward. One had a knee, one had a hand last week. Who knows if they're going to go. Joe Hayden with the suspension. Sheldon Brown's in his 11th year, doesn't have a whole lot left, just like Mary Kay mentioned. You know, Patterson, has really had to step in and play that slot and be that number one corner. And Anquan Boldin kind of ate his lunch last week, to be honest with you. This is a big game, I think, for Eli Manning to really thrive here. And the Giants should be able to have some success against this Browns secondary. If you take a look at it, I'd almost think about resting Akeem Nicks for one more game and saving him for San Francisco. I think you can go to war with, you know, Hickson, Cruz, Barden, and Randall, and I think you'll be okay against this particular group. In my opinion, that's what I would go with. But look, Browns are young. They're not a great team. But that being said, remember, in 2008, they weren't a good team. The Giants went there on a Monday night, and the Browns beat them. Last year, the Dolphins come here as a winless team, and they give the Giants all they can handle. Look, the bottom line in this NFL, and it's an unfashionable thing to say, and I guess it's a boring thing to say, but these teams are so close in terms of talent. If you don't play well, there's a good chance you're going to lose. So the Giants are coming off a loss to Philly. You figure they're going to be pretty angry. They're going to want to bounce back with a win at home, a place where they haven't played all that well the last few years. Try to come back. Why don't you try to end this game in the third quarter and kind of put the Browns away? Because they play hard. And they almost beat the Ravens last week. They almost beat Philadelphia. They're not a terrible football team. But if you play well and you don't make mistakes, you should be in pretty decent shape.
Yeah, they've been in nearly every one of their games so far, even
Bills,
though they're 0-4.
The Bills game was a bit of a blowout, and the Bengals, But yeah, look,
but
they
within
play hard.
Striking distance.
Sure, they play hard.
And you're right, this game plays right into the hands of Eli Manning, 28th against the pass,
yep,
entering this weekend.
Right in his hands.
You know, three of the four quarterbacks that the Browns have faced have thrown for over 300 yards. If there's a game that Eli Manning is licking his chops, it's got to be this one. And it's funny you brought up the Dolphins game because they trailed 14-3 in that contest last season and had to rally. And the Dolphins were also winless at that point. So you can't overlook a team that's extremely hungry and also wants to make a statement and has had good success against defending Super Bowl champs. Let's go back to the lines, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. We go to Richie in Florida. Richie, what's happening?
This was the last time we had a dominant game in rushing. The last time Bradshaw had 100 yards. And what would be the best way to work Brown in as a potential starter for later in the season?
Well, I mean, I'd say, Lance, the last time we had a dominant game rushing was probably against the Carolina Panthers. I mean, Andre Brown was pretty dominant on the ground. In terms of Ahmad Bradshaw's last 100-yard game, that's a good question. Why don't you bring up his game log there, Lance? I don't have my computer in front of me here, but I'm not showing, but I'm trying to think. Based purely off of memory, Bradshaw last had a 100-yard game. I don't think he had one last year. I think you might have to go back to 2010 for that, to be totally honest with you. Let's see.
Right.
Last season.
No, there we go.
He did. He had one against
Buffalo. On October 16th last year, he had 104 yards on 26 carries. Only a 4.0 average, so that still wasn't fantastic. You look, and frankly, I think this is the wrong game to establish the run. Look, I'm not saying don't be unbalanced and just throw it 50 times, but the Browns actually have a pretty good front seven and a pretty good run defense. So I think this is more of an Eli Manning type of game, to be honest with you.
And I would agree. You look at the numbers. Ray Rice was held in check. The only guy that really had a good game against Cleveland on the ground for the most part was LeSean McCoy. What a surprise, and he carved up the Giants on Sunday. 201-939-4513. Appreciate the phone call, Richie. We go to Bob in California. Bob, what's happening?
Yeah, good morning. I've been a Giants fan for about 50 years, even though I'm in California now, but live and die with these guys. Anyway, then back to the Eagles game. I'm just tired of seeing the Giants get beat by these guys year after year, like every other Giant fan, I guess. And it always seems like the same game a lot of times. And I think the big difference in that game was was LeSean McCoy getting loose around those ends and basically carried that team on his back in that second half. And I look at that and I say, Jesus, nobody out there. What's the problem here? I'm assuming the end is supposed to turn them in, and then the linebackers and the cornerback are supposed to get up there. And so how are they pulling them out of there? Is the problem our scheme? I mean, this happened time. They ran the same play two or three times, two times in a row, and somehow we didn't adjust or we didn't do anything with it. And it seems like this is a consistent pattern historically that McCoy is able to do that. Is there any – all I hear is questioning nobody executed. What were they supposed to be executing that they weren't executing?
Well, Bob, they were supposed to be executing their gaps. They were supposed to be able to contain their gaps and be responsible for their assignments. And I think guys took risks and were caught out of position, and LeSean McCoy took advantage of that. The other thing to keep into consideration –
but nobody got out there. I mean, usually you see a team pursuit. There was nobody out there.
Well, that's also miscommunication issues. And the other thing that you have to give credit to is LeSean McCoy. I mean, the guy's got talent. It's not as if he's just running around in circles and getting lucky. He was carving up the Giants' defense because he was faking right. He was moving left. He's a very versatile running back, and the Giants had trouble bringing him down.
And, Bob, I'll say this, too. The reason I'll say it's not scheme, look, the Giants' defense didn't change from half number one to half number two. That's number one. Number two, the Eagles' run scheme didn't change from half number one to half number two. LeSean McCoy had 6 yards at halftime. And you saw the basic same type of defense, same type of offense on both teams in the second half. The Giants players simply did not play as well in half number two. They, like Lance said, they didn't have gap control. You saw in that one long run by LeSean McCoy, I'll give you a specific example. I think that's what you're looking for. Prince Amukamara just got caught flat-footed. He didn't pursue as LeSean McCoy went outside. I guess he must have lost the ball behind the line of scrimmage, and he was a statue, basically taking pictures. So it's little things like that, and one small mistake with one guy not playing his role properly and fulfilling his responsibility, it can throw the whole defense out of whack, and that could turn into big plays.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it might have helped if Keith Rivers was back. Would have helped at all. He's got a little more speed there. The other thing is I don't see him substituting as much as they did last year on that defensive line and trying to give those guys a little break. They were doing a lot of run. We got Ajama, and we had another guy in preseason who was a pretty good tight end. It was I can't remember his name right off the top of my head now. They don't seem to be getting in to give those guys a little relief, especially when they're running like crazy there.
Well, you know what, though? Between Tuck, OC, and JPP, I mean, and then throw Kiwanuka into the mix, too, I think you're getting a pretty decent mix of those guys on the defensive line. And a defensive tackle with Chris Canty at, obviously, you have a young guy like Marcus Kuhn, who's playing defensive tackle, you know, not a guy that needs to be out there for a ton of snaps. I honestly think you're getting a pretty decent rotation on the defensive line.
And appreciate the phone call, Bob. And Ajomo was inactive, so he can't certainly help if he's not in uniform. But he was a big playmaker in the preseason, may get opportunities.
Adrian Tracy was active, though. He's a guy that could have been out there.
Adrian Tracy, certainly. It's a numbers game sometimes with how many guys they can dress in their respective positions. But you know what? Tuck and OC have been relatively silent. I think instead of taking them off the field, they want to see them make plays on the field before they start rotating in and out. And you look at the Eagles because they're so effective in using nine guys and keeping everybody fresh. And you want to try to mimic that. But just because it works for one team doesn't mean that it's the right recipe for your team.
Well, you have to have the personnel for it. You know what I mean? And
absolutely.
I think if you look at the Eagles' backups, the Darrell Taps, the Hunts, those guys are pretty good pass rushers. Are they Trent Cole and Jason Babin? No, of course not. You're not going to have five or six Trent Coles and Jason Babins laying around. But they're guys that can certainly contribute. I think the Giants probably have a little bit more of a drop-off after their top guys than the Eagles do. But look, I know fans don't want to hear it. Sometimes the players just got to play well and make plays. It sometimes really is that simple.
I brought this up yesterday, and I'll throw it out there in case those of you who weren't listening to yesterday's program. Perfect example, Kiwanuka has an opportunity to just run over LeSean McCoy yep. on the DeSean Jackson touchdown and chooses not to. Over pursues, Vic runs further into the pocket and finds Jackson in the left corner of the end zone. It's about effort. It's about execution. It's about the desire. Kiwanuka wasn't out of position. He could have made a play. He just did not take advantage of his matchup.
And I want to bring up one other thing that Bob, I think, was the caller, right, that he brought up. On Keith Rivers, and he's still out with that hamstring injury, and everyone thought it was such a great steal. The Giants got him for a fifth-round pick from Cincinnati in the offseason. And based on talent that it was, and in training camp and in the preseason, he looked great. I was the first guy in that Keith Rivers bandwagon. He looked fantastic. But, I mean, can the guy get on the field?
That's been his biggest issue.
It's been a while here. I mean, he was walking around ice on his hamstring yesterday in the locker room. It was 4 weeks ago. You still got ice, that thing? I mean, and it's not like it was a play where you saw him blow it out running around. It kind of just snuck up on everybody. I mean, it's not like they don't have good linebackers. You have Jaquan Williams and Boley. They played basically the same position. They're doing a fine job. So I honestly don't think that's affecting the defense that much. But it would be nice to have Keith Rivers out there and active on game day.
Tom Coughlin touches on this week in and week out. If there's a part of the body that he would love a player to be able to overcome, it's a hamstring
yeah,
injury.
That's true.
Because every week he says it's a hamstring again. Michael Boley's had hamstring issues. Hostley's had hamstring issues. The list goes on and on.
Kenny Foles, by the way, MCL. Hopefully he will be back 2-3 weeks, I'd say. Ballpark.
Similar to David Deal.
Week to week.
The other situation was Akeem Nicks, and I know you touched on this a bit earlier on. How much concern? Because Coughlin wasn't very optimistic when he talked yesterday.
I would not play him this week. That's something that, look, I think it's pretty obvious at this point. And I don't think the Giants and their medical staff thought Nick's foot was healthy. You know, they probably did x-rays. They saw the bone was healed. He was good to go. But much like we saw Prince Amukamara last year with that same injury, Lance, you can have the x-ray. The bone can be healed. And Prince's was back in November. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to affect the player once he gets back. And it's pretty, look, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think it takes a genius to figure out that that knee probably swelled up because he was changing the way he was running or doing something different because of the foot.
Overcompensating, yeah.
It happens. I mean, look, I don't know if that's for sure what happened, but I don't think I'm going out on a, you know, tightrope.
No, that's a good point.
On a plank trying to figure out what happened to Akeem Nicks' knee. So I think what you got to do is, look, this team's not winning anything without Akeem Nicks being healthy. You can make the playoffs, maybe, but you ain't winning one or two rounds in the playoffs, especially two, if you don't have Akeem Nicks. So you got to make sure this guy gets healthy for the end of the season. If that means sitting him out this week or maybe even against the 49ers if you have to get him 100%, you do what you need to do. This guy is too big of a weapon, and he's so central to your offense. You need him on the field. You got to get him on the field one way or the other.
And the bye week's not until week 11, so
exactly.
It's not as if they have a week that they can, you know, sit him down for two and just rest him. Urgency. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Marty in D.C. Marty, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and John, how you guys doing this
morning? What's up, pal?
Doing well. What you got?
Hey, listen, man, I'm with you 100%. We need to rest Akeem Nicks for this week. He's too integral of a part of our offense to have him keep going down. I mean, honestly, he hasn't played a full season yet, but we need him so much. But my question was, in Coach Coughlin's interview, he said he took a conservative approach on a game on Sunday night. Do you think he'll change his going down the line now? Do you think he'll change his approach if it comes down to these last-minute calls and tight situations?
Honestly, I think it's on a game-to-game basis. I think it depends what the scenario you're in, who's on the field, how many yards you need. It was a conservative approach, I suppose, in last week's game, but I still think it was the right one, in my opinion.
Well, it was a conservative approach from the perspective of not trying to run another play on 3rd and 19.
Exactly.
Outside of that, I don't think it was very conservative because Eli Manning's airing it out down the right sideline when
point.
You could say the conservative approach is run with Bradshaw on a draw, pick up 2 to 3 yards, and take a 40-yard field goal.
That's a good point.
Anything else, Marty?
No, that's it. Thanks, guys.
All right, you
appreciate
got it.
It.
Appreciate the phone call. And a few minutes left on the program. You still have an opportunity to chime in if you want to on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, or you can give us a call, 201-939-4513.
You're in a really good mood this morning, Lance.
Well, you know, you seem very chipper.
Well,
we had some space between us. We're not on top of one another for a full hour.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, I mean, we're, you know, doing the show 3 days a week, so, you know, I'm allowed to relax and run the show today.
So, Lance is very happy that he doesn't have to host a show yeah. with Schmelk. That would be the theme.
You're very good at reading between the lines.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. We're going to take a look at this. We got our fantasy standings here for the year.
Well, I was also going to talk about Monday night game, how we were both wrong on that pick.
That's another thing I'm like 5-13. Oh, my God. Goodness.
But I'll let you give us a recap of the Fantasyland first.
All right, here we go. Fantasyland first. This week, the winner for the week was the great Paul Dottino.
That's a big turnaround for him.
That is. He coming off a 29-point effort in week number three, the worst of any team in any week so far this year by a lot. He comes back with 99 with the best. Is that the best week period overall? Wow. There we go. So he has the low mark. And if you know Paul, he's a very up and down fellow. So it's almost like a massive heart attack cardiac reading for Paul Dottino. So he came in with 99. Howard Cross continues his consistent play week in, week out. Second place every week with 89 points. And then I came in third place with 84, fairly consistent. Danny Salomo with 83. And Lance came in, where is he? Seventh place with 78. Not good point total, still seventh place. And in the overall standings, this is where Lance is really struggling here. Last place.
I thought so Dottino, obviously, with the big week, moved past me because he was at the bottom.
Last place by 10 points.
That's an embarrassment, I will admit. I'm embarrassed to be at the bottom. Yeah.
And despite your fantasy success last night, that simply just made Lance the happiest man on earth, despite
leagues,
everything else that was happening.
Let's put it this way. In leagues that actually count, I'm not downgrading this league.
Whoa, leagues where there's
at least some fun, you know, I'm just saying. It was nice to win in other areas of fantasy football. I'll leave it at that. Brandon Marshall
last
had a big game.
Last place. 225 points total over 4 weeks. That is an average of, let's do my math very quickly. That's an average of about 56 points a week.
It's early. We didn't jump out of the gate.
You have to make up 100 points on Anita Marks, who, by the way, still is in first place.
Wait a minute. How did Paul Dottino have so much success this week? He
Lucky?
Got a touchdown from every single one of his players.
Right.
That's what I need. If I get a touchdown from every one of my players, who knows? I could put up a triple-digit week.
Well, Lance finally figured out the fantasy strategy. Get guys that score touchdowns.
Well, I will make the argument. I think we should have adopted the PPR philosophy in this league. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Stop making excuses.
I think you would have favored that rule, the PPR.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have had an issue with it, but...
See, you're thinking too much on that.
In order to make the scoring system as simple as possible, Melroy has to do everything by hand here. He doesn't have a computer system helping him out. In order to do it by hand...
Basic math. It's very hard.
We took out PPR. I didn't see you volunteering to add up
I'll be
scores.
More than happy.
Oh, please.
I mean, I take on enough as it is, but I'll find out sometime in my day.
Play me the violin, Meadow. Woe is me. Jeez.
Well, while you're, you know, finding out nuggets from the Giants staff here, you know, some other people are doing their own research and finding their other sources.
What do you got here?
Talking to the...
Those
are just
research.
Some lines and questions there. That's nothing. But I wrote some notes on
Lance
the top.
Lance's scripted ad-lib.
So can we get to the Monday night game here?
Sure.
This is how embarrassing our picks have continued to be.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
I'm 5-13 now. That's just about as bad as it gets. Oh, yeah. I'm terrible. Yeah. Just brutal.
I'm glad you're keeping track of them.
I think you're, what, 8-9 now? Something like that.
I was 8-8. That's right. I was 500.
No, I think you were 7-7. I think now you're 7-8.
All right.
Oh
same.
No, maybe not.
8-8, 7-7, same thing. It's 500, no matter how you look at it.
No, you're right. You are 8-9. You're right. But either way, I mean, it's just brutal. It's just like Cowboys were last night. I mean, between Dez Bryant early, Kevin Ogletree later, and Tony Romo in the fourth quarter, 5 turnovers. Bears just dominate, and boy, their defense. It was one of those bend and don't break scenarios. The Cowboys are driving the ball down the field, but the Bears' defense always made that big play to get that turnover and prevent the Cowboys from getting into the end zone.
And it was partially because the Cowboys had their own mishaps on offense that led to the Bears' turnovers.
Yeah, a couple of those turnovers not even really forced. You know, Tony Romo threw a right to Tillman on the miscommunication with Dez Bryant. The ball off of Kevin Ogletree's catch, off his chest, rather. That should have been a catch.
Was it in the red zone?
Dez Bryant dropped 2 big third down plays over the course of the game. He dropped another deep pass down the sideline Jason Witten came back. He caught the ball well for Dallas for the first time this year. Cowboys couldn't run the ball. The Bears' defensive line really kind of dominated the Cowboys' offensive line. And the Bears' offensive line did a great job protecting Jay Cutler. They did a lot of mass protect. You saw two guys blocking DeMarcus Ware on pretty much every single play of that game. He didn't throw one interception. And there you have it. So that was a dominating win by the Bears. A good win for Chicago. The Cowboys that head into a bye week, tied with the Giants at 2-2, along with the Washington Redskins.
And nobody's running away with the NFC North, so the Bears are now trying to take advantage. The Packers
have been
off to a slow start. The Lions have been off to a slow start. The Vikings have been a pleasant surprise. Whether or not they can sustain that the rest of the way remains to be seen. But it gets back to the point in which we were talking about leading up to the Giants-Eagles game. The Eagles were plagued by turnovers. You're not going to win football games if you don't protect the football. If you continue that trend, I'm sorry, you're just not going to walk away with victories. The Cowboys, do you think they thought that they were going to have a chance if Tony Romo throws five interceptions?
No, of course not.
I mean, that's stating the obvious, but it's consistent across the board in the NFL. It doesn't just hold true for one team or teams in the NFC East.
And the game was close until Dallas started turning the ball over, and that's how the Bears really got a lot of their scores. We're late here, Lance. You better wrap this show up.
We are late, but Giants fans are not complaining with the Cowboys losing because now you have three teams at 2-2, and you have the Eagles on top at 3-1.
And I tell you what, if you look at the rest of their schedules, people talk about how tough the Giants' schedule is, and it certainly is. Cowboys' schedule is not much easier. It really isn't. You know, they still have to play the Browns, who the Giants will get this week. But, you know, they got to play the Ravens, the Steelers, obviously. They already played their NFC West team, the Seattle Seahawks. So that game's out of the way. They still got to play Philly twice. They got to play the Redskins twice, the Cowboys. They got to play the Saints still. So, obviously, you know, a lot of tough games coming for Dallas. Carolina, who clearly I think is a much better team that showed up and played the Giants a couple weeks ago. So, look, the Cowboys schedule and the Eagles schedule, too, if you take a look at it down the stretch. It's tough for all these NFC East teams, which is why I said start of the year, I still think 9 wins wins this division. I really do. I think 9 wins the NFC East. And I don't think
back
you're going
to back seasons?
And I don't think you're going to get more than one team coming out of the division because they're going to beat each other up so bad and the schedule is so tough.
It's very rare that a team wins this division with 9.
I mean, could you imagine
looking at last season?
If you get 2 wildcard teams out of the West, what happens if you get the Seahawks and Cardinals as the 2 wildcard teams out of the West this year?
That's a curveball to the NFC playoff picture because
huge
nobody expected
ball.
Two teams to come out of that division.
I mean, look, that could obviously only 3 games in, or 4 games in rather, and that could change. But right now, it wouldn't be shocking if the Cardinals and Seahawks were the 2 wild card teams.
And I think you're probably bound to get 2 teams out of the North this season.
Well, you're not if you're getting 2 teams out of the West. That's what I'm saying. It's going to be very tough for these NFC East teams with their schedules. You know, the AFC North is a tough division. NFC South, tough division that they both have to play. I mean, 9 wins, is that even going to get you into the wild card? We'll see.
That's true.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's still early, but you're right. You can tell some trends right now. It's not looking as if somebody could maybe post 10 wins in this division.
I mean, granted, those NFC West teams are all going to have to play each other. Arizona, Seattle, and San Francisco are going to play, obviously, 2 games against each other the rest of the year, so that's going to balance that out a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for whoever doesn't win the division in the NFC East, to make the playoffs. It happened last year, too. You got one team won the division and 9 wins, and bam, Eagles and Cowboys beat up so badly they couldn't garnish enough wins to make the playoffs.
So what could change things is if San Francisco and Arizona beat up on St. Louis and Seattle, that would create a disparity between the top and the bottom of the division.
Does it look like anyone's going to beat up on Seattle, though, the way they're playing?
Well, the Cardinals already beat the Seahawks earlier this season in the opener.
Seahawks looked tight.
But
it
was a tight game,
though.
Kevin Cobb had that game-winning drive.
All I'm saying is that, look, this is why, Giant fans, you have to worry about every game. And while, yes, it's only a week 4 game against Philadelphia, and you made this great point on Monday, we don't know what the ramifications of that loss is going to be yet. Because one dopey tiebreaker against Philly or Dallas late in the year could cost you a playoff spot. You don't know. But it's going to be tough.
Paul DeTino and Anita Marks will be with you the next 2 mornings.
So I get 2 days without Lance Meadow. That makes me happy.
Well, we'll be back on Friday before you know it. And Pat Hanlon will join us on Friday. We'll continue to preview the Giants and the Browns all week long as they will kick off 1 o'clock on Sunday. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. We will see you later on the week right here on Big Blue Kickoff.